Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Real quick before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about.
Pinfinity augmented reality enhanced pins take traditional pin collecting to a whole new level.
Pinfinity has their own app that makes these pins that come to life with their unique AR features that are super easy to use. The AR features include animation, sounds, and you can even pull up the card itself, like this Force of Negation.
Plus, they're super durable too, which is really
great
when you drop them on the floor.
They're totally fine. Look, that's like You can drop them and they're so fine.
They can fall out and it's totally okay.
And Pin Infinity really values the community and encourages fans to share their experience and suggest new designs.
So use our affiliate link in the description below and code PTW to get a whopping 20% off of your orders there.
Now let's get into the podcast. This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we got a lot to talk about. We're talking about foundations, all the cards that we'll see play in foundations in CEDH. We're talking about
Jumpstart
foundations, which is kind of foundations, all the cards from that we'll see play in CEDH. We're talking about the new Marvel Secret Lair stuff that we'll see play in CEDH. Not all the Marvel cards, just some. We're talking about some rules, things that we messed up, and some other things that have happened in Magic in the last week or two.
And the SpongeBob set.
Well, no, we don't know that one yet.
Well, we're going to make predictions. It says here SpongeBob predictions. Okay. So we're going to make some SpongeBob predictions today, too.
Basically, everything that they talked about recently. I shouldn't say everything. Wizards released some stuff recently. We're going to talk about it.
We're going to talk about the most time-relevant stuff, because the Marvel Secret Lair has one of the most controversial releases of probably any Secret Lair product of all time.
Yeah, they're not doing it on demand anymore, the Secret Lairs. They're releasing them as like a set amount, and you have to wait on a digital line, but certain people know how to skip the digital line or something.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah. Where like if you're like a web developer, Saki, you can just like copy and paste something and you get like a new link.
I really don't know how computers work. I think they're all magic, but it's a shitty. A lot of people
I think felt
bad about it, which
is lame.
I'm
one of those kids that would get, if I time traveled back to the past, I'd show everyone my phone and be like, yeah, I don't know what to do with this.
This is my phone. It's technology, but you're like, there's no satellites. You would have no idea how it works at all.
It also doesn't work right now either. It's just a dead brick.
There's like a comedian that does a bit about that. Like if he went back to the future, he'd have no way to actually prove it. He has no idea how anything works. He would like explain things from the future, but they're not, whatever. Okay, I'm moving past it.
That'd be funny. Okay, yeah. We have a couple of other notes before we get into all this though, that do we want to address a couple points?
Let's address a couple points.
We've had a couple of things that have happened in videos recently that can't happen in games of Magic.
Yes.
So I think we just want to kind of address and realize that we know what happened. Yeah. And yeah, we're going to talk about them.
First one, power balance, Grafdigger's Cage. Grafdigger's Cage shuts off power balance.
Correct. Because you're casting something from the top of your library. A lot of times, the things that get around Grafdigger's Cage are the things that put the thing from the top of your library into exile, like a Tali, and then you cast them, right? However, that doesn't happen with power balance. You just reveal it from the top of your library and then cast it.
Right, yeah. So that was not, couldn't cast that Final Fortune from the top of the library. That couldn't happen. Also, this is in the game with Lua and Krim, by the way, that this particular thing happened. Also, Angel's Grace. Angel's Grace prevents damage, but not loss of life.
Let's go to Scryfall real quick.
Let's read Angel's Grace, because what Angel's Grace does is weirdly specific.
You can't lose the game this turn, and your opponents can't win the game this turn until end of turn damage that would reduce your life total.
Right. So that's kind of confusing. So even though life loss, it would still take you to negative zero life.
You wouldn't lose
the game, but you would go to negative zero life. So Lua should have died the moment that Krim untapped rather than staying at one and making it to return again.
We should know this because this is how ad nauseum decks worked in modern, when you would go through your whole deck and then Thunderstorm.
After long ass games like that, differentiating between damage and life loss is just something that my brain doesn't try to do. Just at a certain point, I say, that's all probably the same shit.
You just think, oh, my life total can't be reduced to one, and you don't think of the damage that would part.
It didn't really matter. Lua didn't do anything after she went to one and then went to someone else's turn. So whether she was dead or not, really, it didn't matter. That's just an important note.
Because she was purposefully saying, I don't have a way to win at instant speed, so there's nothing that I could do to impact the game. I'm not even going to counter anyone's stuff.
There's probably other mistakes. We make mistakes all the time, but those ones were pretty big.
There's one from another video here that says Phyrexian mana and Convoke does not count as pain mana, because we've had conflicting comments in videos that get a lot of likes that say different things.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was wrong when I said that. Like, I think when you tap all your creatures to Convoke a spell, I don't think that's casting mana. The way that Convoke is, like, worded on the cards, it says it helps you cast the spell. Like, tapping creatures this way helps you cast the spell. But it's not actually spending mana doing that way. It's like an alternative cost.
And if you want to know why, we can look to rule 118.3a.
Good find.
Paying mana is done by removing the indicated mana from a player's mana pool. And Phyrexian mana and Convoked mana is never in your mana pool.
That's actually a helpful distinction, knowing that paying mana means you're removing mana from your mana pool.
Yeah, because tapping a creature like a Birds of Paradise puts mana in your mana pool. That's why that counts. Putting a -0/-1 counter on Wall of Blossoms creates mana, but when you tap it to Convoke your Court of Calling, that is not paying mana.
Wall of Roots?
What did I say? Wall of Blossoms.
I think that's the white one.
That draws a card?
Or is it the
Wall
green
of Omens.
That's Wall of Omens. Wall of Blossoms is the green one that draws a card.
Yeah,
okay,
so,
okay.
So, all right, couple things that now we know, and now we have, like, resources we can point to why, so when we make that mistake again in the future, just go, rule 118.3A.
Perfect. Now we know.
There we go. All right.
Rules part over?
Rules part over. We can waste time on that today because we have only like 13 or 16 cards to talk about from three different sets.
Yeah, and a couple of them are a breeze. We'll breeze right through them. Yeah. It's all foundations. It's all
the Jumpstart Foundations.
Jumpstart Foundations and then the Marvel Secret Lair specifically.
That will possibly see play in CEDH.
That will possibly see play in CEDH.
So we will not be talking about all of the Marvel cards. If you thought we're talking about all of them today, that's for a different time. Do you want to start off with the cards you put in the sideboard here?
Yes, let's do the honorable mentions first.
All right, so the first one's Infestation Sage, which is a black mana for an elf warlock. That's a 1/1 that says when it dies, you make a 1/1 black and green insect token with flying.
This is a Doom Traveler that's in black right now. This doesn't normally see play in CDH, but there are some Razaketh lines that like a creature that sacrifices into another creature. So the first one finds LED, and then you make a token sack the second one for an Underworld Breach. It's not a common theme that I've seen a ton, but it's a piece of the puzzle that are in high power in CDH decks, so another one is nice.
Every other version of this card is a white mana creature, whereas every other version of this card in black is at least a 2-mana creature. I'm probably wrong, but there's none that come to mind really recently, and like I'm thinking of a lot of them that are 2-mana 1/1s that die into like a 2/2 zombie or something like that.
Maybe
right?
Yawgmoth wants something like this. Sacrifice it if you're playing Yawgmoth.
Yeah, so
it's close.
If you're looking for a reason to sacrifice things, then you have this, and now you don't need to be in white too.
Speaking of sacrificing things,
Vengeful Blood Witch is 1 and a black for a 1/1 vampire warlock that says whenever this creature or another creature you control dies, target opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. I thought this was a power crept blood artist because it literally has more power, but I'm realizing that it's not any other creature. It's just one that you control.
Yeah, Blood Artist affects your opponents, so if your opponent's going through a death loop, your Blood Artist can still say no, but this one is only your own things. It's still another version of this effect. What's the other one? There's a human ally.
Zulaport Cutthroat. If you're in white, there's also Elias Okor, whatever that guy's name is. Yeah.
The black and white one.
The black and white one, right?
It's another one of these effects.
Yeah, this is the fourth best one now.
Right, yeah. If you're looking for just more of this effect, this is another one that sometimes sees play in tier 3 fringy CDH decks.
And now on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, we have Koma, the World Eater.
Unfortunately, Tyler is not here to tell us that this is not good in Kinnan, but yes, Koma, what is this card
do? Yeah, this is 3 and 2 green and 2 blue for an 8/12. What were they thinking? It's a legendary creature serpent that can't be countered. It is trample and ward 4.
Not only that,
but it also, whenever it deals combat damage to a player, creates 4/3/3 blue serpent creature tokens named Koma's Coils.
Yeah, this is the same token that the other Koma makes, I think?
I'm pretty sure
I think it
is.
Yeah. This one is just so laughably powerful in casual, in high power. This one just like, it's uncounterable. It's got ward, it's got trample, it makes extra bodies every time it deals damage, it does everything. In CDH, this just doesn't progress you towards a win as quickly as you would like or as quickly as other cards could.
I think realistically, it's actually making the same amount of Komas. Yeah, at the beginning of each upkeep. It's just doing them at a different time.
What makes 4?
It makes 4 3-3s, and this other Coma, the original Coma, makes a 3-3 at every upkeep. So it actually makes the same amount, and it costs the same. Just for some reason, it's way fucking bigger.
Way bigger. And what are the stats on the other one?
7 mana 6/6.
Well, what are the keywords?
It can't be counter. It gained trample and ward, but you are able to sacrifice the other serpents so that you can tap a permanent to inactivate it, or you can give your Coma indestructible.
Overall, I don't think this card will actually see play in CDH. It's a fun, super cool, new, powerful Simic card, but I think it'll fall short in Kinnan because Kinnan wants things like Void Winner that affect the board a little bit.
Honestly, Kinnan wants original Coma a little bit more. Yeah, to be able to like shut some other stuff off.
Honorable mention over.
All right, so let's get into the real fucking deal. The
white cards.
Oh, white cards. Oh, yeah. There's none. Move past it.
That's not so funny. There's just none. There's
I didn't
none.
Even notice that it's so white right now. Yeah, you literally just confused the shit out of me. So let's move on to the blue cards. Well, I guess the first blue card we're talking about also has a white color identity, though, too, because it's Plagon, the Lord of the Beach.
Okay. It's like a, what is it, a starfish?
What are we doing? It's a starfish wizard, yes.
It's a starfish wizard.
Yeah.
That's honestly badass.
Honestly, that is really cool. It's riding a turtle, and it's got anime art. So, 2 and a blue for an 0/3 legendary starfish wizard that when it enters, you draw a card for each creature you control with toughness greater than its power. That's not bad.
It counts itself.
Each creature, yes, it counts itself. And then for a blue or white hybrid mana, target creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power this turn.
Yeah, so that part is not going to be as relevant in CDH, but the draw, I think, kind of makes it something. There are cards like Dranith Magistrate and
Dauntless Dismantler. Those were the first two creatures that I thought of.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lot. This isn't going to be a deck that plays a lot of creatures, and to be honest, I'm not positive it's anything, but I do like it in like a Hullbreaker strategy or a Displacer Kitten strategy where you can flicker your commander a bunch, or if you're making infinite mana, this is technically an outfit if you're bouncing stuff in and out.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you get to draw your whole deck that way.
Yeah, even if it's just one, you just draw one at a time. If you're able to set up Hullbreaker Horror and, you know, the infinite mana and go through it that way.
Because every time that you make infinite mana, and then every time that you cast your commander, you draw a card, you still choose to bounce something else of yours.
Right.
And then you can keep going through the loop now just with your rock and then Plagon.
And then it's just also like really good with Displacer Kitten if you can get it to pretty high. Like, I don't know. Things have to get a little bit out of control. And as far as blue-white goes, Heliod, I feel like, is at the top of that.
Yeah, which I feel like right now a little bit better, but I also feel like maybe you could push into a stacks deck with this because you're able to draw cards and you can still like focus around blinking this card. Like there's a bunch of creatures,
Ephemerate,
or even like Soul Tender, the thing that blinks it at the end of every end step then and will like make it bigger. That way you're kind of forced to play creatures that have toughness bigger than their power, like Archon of Emeria and like a bunch of stacks pieces in white that we can look to that will do that. And then having ways that maybe we could make infinite mana and then blink it and then like still win through stacks pieces. That might be hard if you're trying to do Archon of Emeria and Eidolon of Rhetoric things. But I mean, like they got big butts that you could like just kill the table with its activated ability.
It's not nothing that the activated ability does make your clock faster and allow you to attack for a little bit quicker. I mean, it's not a lot making Dranith Magistrate attack for 3, but if you add them all together, it's gonna help you close the game, which is what slow controlling stacksy decks need help doing. So not only does this offer that blue white slow controlling stacksy deck card advantage in the command zone, it offers a win condition and it offers a way to end the game with combat damage if you need to. Not at the best rate for all of those things, but a little bit of everything. So I think it's worth testing out, maybe.
I think so, too. It has a lot better legs than I thought coming into this. And I already thought it had some pretty good legs. So
I don't think it has any legs at all because it's a starfish.
It has five arms.
I feel like starfish all have
arms.
Okay,
but Patrick Starr, who we'll be talking about later in this episode, also, he has 2 arms and 2 legs and 1 head.
I wonder if this is Patrick Starr.
Oh, this is just Patrick Starr, right?
I wonder if they're going to reskin this to be Patrick
Starr.
That's
so funny. On a scale from 1 to 5, what do you give Plagon?
That's tough. 5 is CDH staple. It goes in every deck. 4 is a solid tier 2 strategy that you're going to see a lot. 3 is, you could see it. It'll do well. It'll win some games. 2 is not so great, but it's playable. And then 1 is not CDH at all. I would say somewhere around a 3. I'm going to go just a 3. I'll just start off with a 3.
Just a 3, yeah, because it's a deck, and it seems like it has some legs. It's not in the best color combination, but it can do stuff. You're in Silence colors. You're in Counterspell, Rhystic Study, Mystic Remora colors, so it's not like you're going to have a bad 80 cards in your deck.
Right. I'm confident that this tech could win roughly 25% of your games if you're a decent pilot and build the deck well, so that's a 3 to me.
High Fae Trickster is 3 and a blue for a 4/2. Hey, we're rhyming so far. This is a fairy wizard with flash and flying, and you may cast spells as though they had flash.
We've had a lot of this recently. Born upon the wind. I think I always say born upon a wind, but it's the wind? Born upon the wind. Born upon the wind. No, I think... fuck, I don't know. I can't remember which one. If it's a wind or the wind.
It is a wind.
A wind. Born upon a wind and the otter. Play the otter.
Valley Floodcaller.
Both of these cards, I've been having a lot of fun recently with Grixis, and I've seen a lot of other decks play these ones.
This is like a combination of the both of them, because it's on a creature, but it's not limited to the types of things that you can cast at instant speed.
It's not nothing that Valley Floodcaller can't play Thassa's Oracle at instant speed. That's kind of relevant sometimes, and there's a bunch of other creatures, obviously. But 4 mana, that's competing
so
with
expensive.
A lot of slots.
Yeah, that's so expensive. I feel like that almost... prices this out.
I don't think I'll try it in Rog'Sai, but I wouldn't fault people for playing it in more mid-rangey decks, but I'm not trying it in the turbo versions.
I think having Ad Nauseam in your deck also means that like you're not really looking for that, because you already have 3 of this effect with your Necropotence, basically, and I think you do get to a certain point where you're like, I just don't have the mana to be able to flash this in after I made 3 mana to Necro all in the same turn and like put these wins together. Already, I feel like people were like, oh, do we want Valley Floodcaller in my deck? And I feel like this just kind of like pushes it out.
The way that I have normally been thinking about Necropotence recently is that the turn that you tap out for Necropotence, you're normally not looking for the win right away, unless you've just made like buckets of mana or something. I have been finding the turn one Necropotence to untap with a couple of mana and then spend a lot of mana, but Necropotence is notably 3 mana, so it's not unheard of to think that you'll untap with 3 mana, which means you can cast a Valley Floodcaller and then chain that into your other stuff. But making it just 1 more mana, I feel like it makes that second Necro just that much trickier.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Your line's got to be razor close.
Yeah, because I'm specifically thinking of it as like a turn 3, turn 4, when like you've set up a little bit, like your turn 1, Rograk was like into Sol Ring and Mox Amber, and like you're setting up for to do it all in one turn. In that case, I think that's bad. Yeah. I do kind of like it a little bit better in that scenario where your turn 1 Necro
is the way to do it.
You Necro for 6 cards, and then on your next turn, then you can flash this in. Like this is a little bit easier to get in under that circumstance. But I feel like it's still like walking the line of something that you might actually want.
Are you thinking about it in Rog Thrasios? Because that's a deck that can make a lot more mana, and because of Seedborn Muse, having consistent access to instant speed stuff, that feels a lot better there.
I mean, I'm honestly not even on Valley Floodcaller in my version, and because I'm on a crop rotation package with Emergent Zone, and I already have Born Upon a Wind.
Okay.
Because Seedborn Muse is a heavy strategy in my deck, I feel like High Fae Trickster might be something that I would want, but I also feel like I would rather put Valley Floodcaller in the deck first.
Maybe a lot of your combos are like have a creature involved. Like
I need
they
to
have
get
a,
one creature.
They have a
Kinnan
in there somewhere, or I guess the Hullbreaker Horror not as much because that one has flash. But
yeah, it would require me to have like Finale of Devastation so that I could do that at instant
speed.
Which
you could
instead.
Still do,
yeah,
right?
But it's
yeah.
just more expensive.
All I mean is I think it's more considerable in a Seedborn Muse Guy's Cradle deck than it is in a Turbo Grixis. Deck,
I think
sure.
so too. Yeah, this is for the slow decks that want to be able to win instant speed as opposed to the turbo decks, which normally want these kind of effects.
I'm going
to
give this one a 3.5, which feels a little high maybe, but at least at first, I think players will like this effect and I think they will play it. I don't know if it'll directly lead to a bunch of victories, but instant speed's good. I could be wrong. 4 mana, who cares? If you're going to win, whatever.
I think 3.5 is a good ceiling for this card, so we'll give it that. I wouldn't be surprised to see it dip under that as time goes on. So like if we reevaluate this card in a year, I might be surprised to give it a 3.5, but we'll see.
Moving on.
Tiny Bones, Bauble Burglar. This is 1 and a black for a legendary creature, Skeleton Rogue, 1/3. Whenever an opponent discards a card, you exile it from their graveyard with a stash counter on it. During your turn, you may play cards you don't own with a stash counter on them from exile and spend mana of any type to cast those spells.
So it's like... go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I forgot there was more words
There's
on this
so
card.
There's so much on this card. Yeah, for a 2-mana creature, For 3 and a black and tap it, each opponent discards a card, activate only at sorcery speed.
This is sort of like a Dothi Voidwalker. Sort of like a mana outlet, an infinite mana outlet.
It's an infinite mana outlet if you have a way to untap Tiny Bones.
Mm, it taps.
He taps it, and it's a worse Dothi Voidwalker because it's just things that people discard. You kind of have to be playing original Tiny Bones as your commander.
Or Turgrid.
To make that work out, right?
Yeah. It'll go in those specific decks, Nath, if anyone's still playing Nath.
Oh, yeah.
This one can go right in there.
There you go. So there's a couple homes, but...
Does that make it a 3 or is that a 2?
I think it's going to make it a 2 because in all these circumstances, we're talking about like tier three, tier four decks.
We'll call them fringe.
Fringe. Yeah.
They're not bad. They're fringe.
They're fringe.
And
yeah.
This goes in fringe decks. So a two sounds fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Very so cute art. Love Very, Tiny Bones as a character.
Yeah, in general, yeah. It's just too bad that a lot of his cards are bad.
All right, what's the next card, Cameron?
So this is Abyssal Harvester, which is 1/2 black for a demon warlock. That's a 3/2. You can tap them to exile target creature card from a graveyard that was put there this turn. Create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a nightmare in addition to its other types. Then exile all other nightmare tokens you control.
Not sorcery speed.
Not sorcery speed, which is really cool. It's a tap ability.
It's
which
a tap ability. Summoning sickness, yeah.
But if you're able to get him out earlier and then, like, entomb something, this is like a multiple reanimator. You can't reanimate something more than once. Let me say that again. Because what I mean is you can reanimate something more than once because when you try to reanimate something else, you will sacrifice the original thing that you reanimated so that on a next turn you could reanimate it again.
This one exiles the thing, though, right?
Oh, shoot. You can't
do that. It exiles it. So, like, this one is not good with Hoarding Broodlord lines. This doesn't help there. But it could help with Razaketh lines because Razaketh doesn't go anywhere. You just need the one copy Razaketh.
Okay, so this is way worse than I thought that it was going to be originally. Way worse, because I did think that it could work with, like, Hoarding Broodlord. Like, it was just, like, a creature that you could use as, like, a reusable reanimator.
It would have been better with Dockside still around. It could make copies of dead Docksides, which is nice.
Be way better than that, but I think now, after I've reread this, this is going to get, like, a 1.5 at best.
A 1 sounds fair for me. It's going to do fun things in reanimator strategies at the high power level, I think. What it does is cool and fun, but Summoning Sickness at 3 mana, the effect isn't as reliable as I want it to be. I'm not really looking at this one, I don't
not
think.
Not for me.
Not for me.
Rev, Tithe Extractor is a little bit more for me, though. This is 3 and a black for a 3/3 legendary creature human rogue that says whenever you attack, target creature gains death touch. There you go. If you want to run your
whenever
creature
you
into
attack, target creature gains death touch.
Yeah.
Oh, that doesn't actually help at all. Because
no,
it's whenever
doesn't.
You attack.
Yeah, whenever you attack, yeah.
There is like a world where I could set up where I give my opponents Olivia Voltaire and Death Touch so we work together and then Olivia Voltaire and then pings off something I don't want. But like
that's not a world. That's not a world that exists. Okay. Unless Olivia Voltaire is in standard again.
Yeah. All right, what is this going to actually, what does this do?
All right, so whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, create a treasure token, then look at the top card of that player's library and exile it face down. You may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled. What kind of, like, extra Ragavan
is
this?
Yeah, it just turns all your creatures into Ragavan, basically. They all have Ragavan ability, which is cool and fun.
Well, it's whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player. So I think it's the same kind of Timna wording.
It's Timna wording. Yeah, I guess it's Timna Ragavan combined. Yeah, because if you send two creatures at one player, that's one trigger. But if you send two creatures at two players, that's two triggers.
And I love the incentivizing of not having your opponents block, too, by
the death
giving
touch
your
is helpful.
Yeah, so I actually think this card's really, really good.
I kind of compare it to Grim Hireling. It does something similar. Grim Hireling can combo with Najeela, which is a difference.
Ooh, that's
a big
true.
Difference.
Yeah.
This one, at maximum, can only make 3 treasures, not 5.
Grim or Hireling, 6.
Or 6, which is how
much
Grim Hireling could
make. Yeah, but I feel
like
there's a lot of times where I've wanted to put Grim Hireling in decks and be like, wow, what a great value piece this can be. Because I can make so much mana, I can destroy creatures with it by using its ability, and then I pass the turn thinking it's something I can do at instant speed, but you can't.
But you can't.
And I feel like card advantage is better than removal. So
I feel like
in most decks that wanted Grim Hireling, I feel like Rev is just going to be better.
Honestly, I agree, which just feels a little bit strange. But yeah, if you were playing Grim Hireling in not Najeela, I think this is a better swap. I think this is better. Even though the potential for slightly less treasures is fine, the lack of removal is fine, the potential card advantage, I think, is huge.
You're going to get people's mana rocks instead,
right? Yeah, and like it just also like is a weird, I don't want to say stacks pieces, but it shuts off top deck tutors in a lot of weird ways or it makes them have to do them in strange ways.
Yeah, so like Imperial
you're
Seal
people.
In particular,
yeah,
like you can't
like this,
do that.
Exactly. So I think this one's close to 4 mana is the big issue. You can only run so many 4 mana spells in your deck. You know what I mean? This competes with Talion and Notion Thief, Smothering
Tide,
whatever else.
What are we
else.
Doing? Are we like in Timna Malcolm, I guess, to use this properly?
I feel like, what's the power of this card?
3/3. So it's even more tough than Grim Hireling, which I do like in when like Orcish Bowmaster is around.
It's a shame that it doesn't work with Delny. Does it give the creature the Ragavan ability? So if you give the creature to a 2/2 and you have Delny out, will that creature double Ragavan?
No, she has the ability. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, then she triggers.
Okay. So it doesn't work great with Delny, but I do agree Malcolm Timna-style decks. What?
Also, you may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled.
Oh.
Ragavan's impulsive.
So if you hit their counterspells.
Dude, you can use their counterspells. Whoa.
Oh, this is good.
This is a great Timna Malcolm card all of a sudden. Because like when you do want to be able to grind a little bit more, this is going to have a lot more utility then.
Oh, yeah, dude. This is really something, I think.
Oh,
Being able to hold on to their counterspells makes a big difference,
yeah, especially like when you have the ability to get stuff from three different players. You find a mana rock, a land, cast. So you can't play lands off of it.
If you can split it up. Now, dealing damage to three opponents, that's going to be tricky to manage frequently. But if you have commanders and a deck that are set up for it, this feels pretty good.
Okay, hear me out. I'm going to rate this a little bit higher than the Flash card, High Fate Trickster, because it's a little bit more unique in what it does. It fills a lot more roles than we originally thought. It exists in other places, but not all in one card in this way, which I think ends up giving a lot more of an oomph to Rev.
I kind of agree. The Flasher, in my opinion, is kind of a worse version of stuff that we already have. Valley Flood Caller, the non-creature stuff is not as relevant as one mana less. I would much rather have the effect at one mana less normally.
I would much rather draw a card, especially if like Born Upon a Wind, than have a 4-2 flyer out of the deal too.
So yeah, I think this one's like but it's not a 4.
No, I would say a 3.7. Like it's just, it ekes out High Fate Trickster enough where like I have enough of a reason to give it like 2 points higher than it, but
I feel like it's a good fit for Blue Farm, for Chimnacrom.
If you're slow Blue Farm, I feel like I want to go fast in Blue Farm right now, but I also feel like our meta is a little bit different than I guess what a lot of other people are experiencing right now. I would like this in Blue Farm too, right? I mean, you have Timna, which is something that you want to be able to like
an evasive Chrom attacker. Like if you want to do the mid-range Blue Farm stuff, I think this is a real consideration. I know the lists were on Talion for a bit. I don't know if they still are. I never loved Talion in Blue Farm. It's a great card advantage engine, but I just think I would want this effect more.
It does everything that you want.
This gives you mana and cards.
Yeah, that's so good.
I like this. 3.7 sounds
3.7
good.
3.7 for Rev. Good card. Okay, so our patron Zach Hartley has a card that he's excited to talk about, so I'm gonna let him take it from here.
Card that I want to look at is Nine Lives Familiar. So it's 1/2 black for a creature cat love. Enters with 8 revival counters on it if you cast it, and then when it dies, if it had a revival counter on it, return it to the battlefield with 1 fewer revival counter on it at the beginning of the next end step. So it's a fun cat that has 9 lives. So flavor wise I love it, and I'm here for that. Thinking about putting it in Yawgmoth for having a sac outlet for that, drawing cards, and then putting -1/-1 counters on things, and having that be able to do 4 times in a turn cycle seems okay. Also, having a good sac creature for Phyrexian Altar or Phyrexian Tower in terms of a mana outlet, also really like that. In any Skull Clamp decks, 1 mana, draw 2. Can do it 9 times, also seems pretty good. And those are the things that I'm thinking about with this particular card. Is it any good? I don't know, but I'm certainly going to try in those particular instances.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Bloodthirsty Conqueror is not a good card, but we're just going to talk about it real quick because it is a combo piece with something. It's 3/2 black for a 5/5 Death Touch Flyer Vampire Knight, and whenever an opponent loses life, you gain that much life.
Does this combo with Dina?
It does combo with Dina.
It's not the alternate version that combos with Dina. This combos with Dina?
Correct, yeah, because Dina, the Soul Steeper, specifically says whenever you gain life, each opponent loses life.
Okay.
And this one, whenever an opponent loses life, you gain life.
So that on a creature, I actually do think is a huge deal for Dina decks. I don't know who's playing Dina right now, but if you are, I got to imagine this one goes in because it's a creature that your creature tutors can find.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So I think that makes this a little bit better for something like that, but there's not a lot of decks that wanted to play this anyway.
Yeah, it combos with Vito. There's the Vito, the 3-mana vampire that I think is also Dina.
Whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much
life. I keep on mixing them up.
Whenever an opponent loses life, you gain life. Okay.
Okay, yeah, so there's two veto. There's two creatures. This combo existed in 2 5-mana enchantments that did this, but now we got a 5-mana creature and a 3-mana creature, and I think just creatures are easier to find than enchantments because green creature tutors are really good, but like the enchantment tutors all kind of suck. Now, will that make this combo a CDH combo? Still 5 plus 3, and then you still have to trigger damage, so maybe not. You
probably
know what I mean?
Not, but it's better. Extra oomph that you get now that you can't play Jeweled Lotus and Mana Crypt.
And it's Dina, I do think it's the real deal. Because in Dina, it's like a one-card combo on a creature that's easy to find. So I like that.
Yeah, so I like that there.
2.9?
2.9. Yeah, 2.9. Yeah, I like that there. Electro Duplicate is 2 and a red for a sorcery that lets you create a token that's a copy of target creature that you control, except it has haste. And at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice this token. But you can also flash this one back for 2 and a red.
That's a chunky.
2 and 2 red you flash it back for. But you're right, that is a chunky. It's 2 chunkies, actually.
Yeah. It's also a dual caster mage combo. It's the same as Twin Flame and Heat Shimmer, right?
And Molten Duplication.
The real good one now.
Yeah, this is just a Heat Shimmer now that has flashback.
Which I think it's still worse than Molten Duplication.
Agreed. And Twin Flame for that reason.
2 mana is just better than 3. Doesn't matter if it has flashback. 2 mana is better.
Because your creature is in play at that point. So even if you have the ability to flash it back from your graveyard, you'll not have the ability to dual caster mage from your hand unless you already have like something else, right? So I don't think that gives it enough of an edge to want to play over the 2 mana options.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, you're not gonna play it over that, but I do think if you want a fourth copy of it, we're happy. If you're playing a Tali.
Oh, if you're in a Tali, this is a shoo-in.
Like,
yeah.
If you also want to copy your 7-mana commander as many times as possible, this is great.
So love Electro Duplicate for that. Let's give it a 3 because I know that it's going in at least a Tali.
I don't remember what's a 3, so 3.1, I'll give it.
We gave Plagon a 3.
This is better than Plagon.
So a 3.1, that makes sense. Okay. Gornog the Red Reaper is 2 and a red for a legendary creature Minotaur Warrior that's a 2/3 with haste that says cowards can't block warriors, some of the most infinite text in all of Magic.
I think you made a different word. You said some of the most infinite text in all of Magic.
Oh, I meant to say infamous.
Infamous.
Infamous. Whenever one or more warriors you control attack a player, target creature that player controls becomes a coward. Oh, that's interesting. Attacking warriors you control get +X/+0, where X is the number of cowards your opponents control. That's interesting. So it's 2 attack triggers that it gets that you can stack in a way that will always boost your creatures no matter what.
Yeah, and then also it just makes your warriors more evasive for Najeela. I think that's the only place that I could reasonably see this is in a very aggro-centric Najeela list.
Yeah, like if you're trying to not play no bad cards Najeela, I guess.
Yeah, if you want to play bad cards in your Najeela, this one's great. It becomes a coward forever, so it can never be blocked by your warriors.
Yeah.
That's not nothing, so you can stack them and make more and more each turn.
Yeah, making Najeela unblockable, I think, is something that is super important.
But it's really only going to see play there, and it's not going to see play in the best Najeela decks, I don't think. If you want to play in these aggro-focused ones, maybe there.
But it does have haste, so like Samut will also work with it,
yeah,
too,
that's
the
true.
Turn that it comes out.
I guess once you get enough synergies, maybe it will make this like the superior version, maybe. I still would give it like a 2.5 or something.
I think so too, because yeah. I do think
I'm just not sure.
Yeah, you could play it in Najeela, but I don't think it's going to be one of the better Najeela cards you could be playing. I think if you're in Najeela, like, I would want to be in a Najeela deck that's playing ad nauseum and, like, right, still trying to go fast and, like, backdooring into Najeela still.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, too.
Dionysus, Elvish Archdruid, that's not its name. Dionysus is a location in one of the Bioshock games. Dionys is this creature's name. This is 3 and a green for a legendary creature, Elf Druid, that is a 3/3 that says, elves you control have, whenever this creature becomes tapped during your turn, untap it and put a +1/+1 counter on it. This ability triggers only once each turn.
Yes, so 4 mana is another, there's a lot of 4 mana cards in these set, but 4 mana is kind of a lot for this, but this is going to behave sort of like a Kinnan in Elf Ball decks. It's basically going to allow all of your elves to tap for twice, so that means your Sovala can tap twice, that means all your elves can tap twice. That's really good.
That's really good.
And
Elf they
Ball
get
deck,
bigger,
good.
Too.
And
yeah,
they get bigger, which is not nothing.
It's like the opposite of Marwyn, where Marwyn gets bigger and allows you to tap her for more mana the more elves you have.
Yeah.
This thing makes your other elves bigger and allows them to tap for more mana. That's
so
funny.
All part of the puzzle. I think if you're playing Elf Ball and CDH, this one is maybe a consideration. Even though 4 mana is a little bit high, just you're probably going to get that mana paid back to you that turn. I guess maybe not if you tap elves for it, because it has to see the elves tap.
I guess, yeah. But if you're playing like Circle of Dreams Druid,
yeah,
and have the
cradle,
ability to
like
that, untap that.
Oh, yeah. That's really good.
Yeah, really cool that it gives that ability to all elves.
Right.
Oh, you know what? Even if you play Cryptolith right in your deck then, like I know there's a lot of elves then that don't tap for mana, like Dionys itself.
There's also the new enchantment creature that when it dies, it comes back as an enchantment that does the same thing, gives all your creatures tap for mana. Forget the name of it. Tyler's been loving it in Kinnan recently. Hopefully it's on screen right now.
Enduring Vitality, I think, is what it is.
That's another one that works well with this.
It just becomes tapped. It's not even tap it for mana.
Yeah, so if you attack with them, you'll still get to untap, so you still get pseudo-vigilance.
It just gives them
looking
all
for.
Vigilance, yeah, too. Or if there's just like other tap abilities that elves might have.
I still only think it'll really see play in elf decks, which are really just overall not normally very powerful in CDH. So I think I still want to give this like a 2.3.
That was literally what I was thinking too. That's so exciting. Yeah, 2.3 just because it's already a strategy that I don't want to be in and in a color I don't want to be in. And I could go on and on, but I feel like 2.3 is exactly where it belongs.
But in the deck that this card belongs in, it's going to be like a 4.5 probably.
All right, now we are going to take a little break from Foundations and Foundation Jumpstart cards and talk about a couple of Marvel cards here.
Very exciting. This is cool.
This is very cool. We're going to start with Captain America, the first Avenger, the first Marvel superhero to appear on the Play to Win channel here. This is red, white, and blue, of course, for a human soldier hero that's a 4/4 legendary creature. It has Throw, which for 3 mana unattaches an equipment from Captain America. Oh, that's also part of the cost. And then you can deal damage equal to that equipment's mana value divided as you choose among 1, 2, or 3 targets. Then you could catch, which says at the beginning of combat on your turn, attach up to 1 target equipment you control to Captain America.
This one, number one, is very flavorful to the movies. The throwing the shield, bouncing it off, shooting, catching. I feel like that's what Captain Marvel does. Like, this is, I feel like, kind of perfect
Captain
for that.
Captain Marvel is two completely different characters.
Oh, Captain America,
There's a Captain Marvel in DC, and there's a Captain Marvel in Marvel, too.
For Captain America. It's very flavorful for Captain America.
Yeah, too his shield captains. Bouncing off of stuff.
The main thing that I want to talk about for CD is that 3 mana ability to remove an equipment and deal damage divided as you choose. If you make infinite mana and you can remove an equipment over and over again, you can shoot the whole table. So I have a combo. A Feto Alchemist, is that what it's called?
Oh shit, from Nadu. Feto Alchemist,
yeah. So if you play that with Illusionist's Bracers, which is a 2 mana equipment that says whenever an ability of an equipped creature is activated, if it isn't a mana ability, copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy and it equips for 3. So you can tap the Feto Alchemist to target itself and have the Bracers allow you to untap another thing as well. So you untap the Effetto and you untap the other thing as well, a land, whatever, command tower or something. You can tap it again to make infinite mana.
That's it has to be a creature. Effetto Alchemist only lets you untap a creature.
It has artifact or creature. So it has to be, you have to have another mana rock
like
out
too. Soul Ring,
like
your
Soul
Ring,
like a Soul Ring, like a Mana Vault, like something like that. There's also other cards that do the same thing. Tidewater Minion allows you to untap a permanent. That one can be used to land.
There
that
we go.
That one's 5 mana though.
Oh yeah. A lot of those effects that let you untap a permanent in blue are like 3 mana. So Effetto Alchemist with like a mana rock seems way better.
Yeah, so it's kind of a shitty infinite mana. You have to summoning sickness, you have to wait for that or cheat it and play with haste, something like that. And then you have to have the Illusionist Bracers, which is an equipment specifically, but infinite mana will allow you to win the game. That's a 2-card combo, sort of, in a Jeskai deck.
You're playing this combo in particular because then that way you can start putting the braces on things and then removing it with Captain America's ability.
To shoot the table.
Exactly. That's why you're playing this combo.
That's
and
why
not
this
like Isochron
one.
Scepter
right.
or something like that. Okay.
You know, you could play Isochron Scepter and then just play a couple other equipments. It just felt like it made more sense to me to have the combo included equipment so like it's the
yeah,
piece is
exactly.
right there when you have it.
Yeah, so that way you don't have to like find a third card.
Right, and there's also I like the fact that there are cards like Open the Armory and Steel Shaper's Gift that are very, 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 very cheap ways to put equipments right into your hand.
Yeah.
I feel like that makes it very helpful to be able to find your combo when you need to.
Yeah, and this deck gets to play both of the Recruiters too, which also find the Alchemist nicely as well.
Right.
So maybe even like you play other things like Greaves and stuff to help give you
definitely.
I think haste.
I have Conqueror's Flail in here as another equipment that just can help you have protection. I imagine maybe things like Stoneforge Mystic might even be something that you'd consider as just like more ways to find it.
You know what's funny about Flail in particular, too, is that you get to equip it for free to Captain America with Captain America out. You just have to pay that upfront cost, which I think is super slick.
Who knows? Do you know what I mean? Is this going to compete with the top tables? I'm not sure, but
you
I do
think... You can backdoor into Intuition piles.
You can, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're in good colors. You're in Underworld Breach colors. You can backdoor into Intuition stuff, like you said. Like, I think this one's close enough, and you get to play enough, like, fun equipment stuff. I think this one can work in CDH, so I'm going to give it, like, a 3.3.
I'll give it a 3.2. so that that way we can round it into a nice 3.25.
That feels comfortable.
All right, let's talk about Storm Force of Nature, which is one, a green, a blue, and a red for a 3/4 mutant hero with flying and vigilance. She's legendary and has, what's the name of this ability? Ceaseless Tempest. Whenever Storm deals combat damage to a player, the next instant or sorcery spell you cast this turn has Storm.
Which is insane. That, what a line of text.
That is a nutty line of text. If you thought Calamex was doing weird stuff, Storm is way nuttier. Yeah. We've heard stories of someone being able to Eldritch Evolution for like 4 Eldritch Evolutions.
Right. Yeah, the Storm only doesn't need to be very high. With a couple of cards, any extra turn spell, I don't know if you know that, extra combat spells work pretty well because you get to keep the Storm going.
Yeah, I feel like the creature tutors are kind of the best ones, I think.
That's where CDH will be using this one the most. This one's tricky. I've heard a lot of chatter about it, and I do think what it can do is super powerful, but I compare it to something like Xur, that if Xur gets to untap and attack, Xur should be able to win the game with nothing else.
Yeah.
But Storm needs to untap and attack and then also have stuff to do. You also have to cast a couple of spells and have some sort of payoff. That's not going to be super hard to do, but it's going to be harder than what Xur's plan is, and Xur's in better colors and doesn't see much play.
And Xur's ultimate thing that Xur's trying to do is a little bit better too. Like, getting Necropotence into play is way better than anything that you're going to do with Storm, because Storm's going to require that even though you did Eldritch Evolution for 4 creatures, you still need to do further game actions after they're in play.
Right, yeah, exactly. And I do think that Xur might be a little bit easier to shut down. Opposition agent just shuts it down, but there are things that shut Storm down too. Not as much instant speed, but stuff like Rule of Law effects is going to completely shut Storm down. The Storm effect is a more powerful ability, I think, but just the requirement of extra setup makes it a little bit more uncertain for me.
You have to play weird too. You have to do all this stuff in your first main phase so that then you can get in with Storm. So like, you're also very much telegraphing what your overall plan is.
It's just the next spell you cast Storm, right?
The next instant or sorcery spell that you cast. So like, you could also like get in with her past the turn and then like put 6 Cyclonic Rifts on the stack at instant speed later.
Oh, it's not the next one you cast.
Oh,
this turn.
Oh, it is this turn.
Yeah, you gotta do it this turn. You gotta do it this turn.
This is how I know that they're not gonna fuck up like the SpongeBob cards and shit like that, because they're always putting stop gaps on these cards to not make them like
not always
too busted.
They miss it sometimes, but yeah, they do catch it.
At least on the Universe is Beyond cards specifically, I should say.
I think I still have to give this one a higher rating than Captain America, even though personally I kind of like Captain America a little bit more. I just think more people are gonna play Storm, so I think it's gonna be seen more. And I think it's going to get explored more, which will overall make the decks better, if that makes sense. So I'm going to give it a 3.4.
I'll give her a 3.4 too. Yeah. Also, wouldn't be surprised if like that goes up a little bit too. But I think that, again, you're telegraphing a lot. It's pretty simple to like kind of stop her in her tracks, I think too. So yeah, 3.4 is what she'll get. Then we'll talk about Niv-Mizzet Visionary as we come back to magic stuff here. For 4, a blue and a red, you get a 5/5 dragon legendary wizard with flying that says you have no maximum hand size. And whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to an opponent, you draw that many cards.
So this one works insanely well with Lightning Bolt and a bunch of other stuff that make it go even more insane than that.
Your Lava Spikes. Vortex is the one that I keep thinking of, because that's a guaranteed way to get a card on everyone's turn. And if someone forgets that Roiling Vortex is in play, or even like has to counter something with Force of Will, that's 5 cards for you.
I've thought about stuff like Seismic Assault, that every extra land that you have can also be 2 cards. Just pitch the land, deal damage, draw 2 cards, maybe one of those is land, you can keep going. That could be kind of becomes a nice engine, which is cool.
I think this is worse than Niv-Mizzet Perun, though. We've been talking about this a lot, like the comparison between the two.
It's uncounterability versus unlimited hand size is the comparison, and in CDH, I like uncounterability a little bit more.
Yeah, you're guaranteed to get a card off of Niv-Mizzet because they can't really, I guess unless they Mind Break Trap it, right? That's like the only thing they can realistically do, but there's no other way to really deal with it on the stack, so if they want to remove it, you're guaranteed to get a damage and a card off of Niv-Mizzet Perun.
And then not only that, the deck is kind of set up to play as many free interaction pieces as possible. So then you get another one, right?
It triggers off of yours.
Yeah.
Whereas this Niv-Mizzet, you have to get it out for 6 mana and then also need to be able to deal damage in some other way, which unless you have Thunderclap for someone's face, can Thunderclap even hit someone's face? It can't.
It can't. Okay. My big issue with this one is a 6 mana non-ward creature that has no protections, just out there that anyone can kill it. And then you also have to play, in my opinion, a bunch of questionable cards.
Bad cards.
We'll call them bad cards. A bunch of bad cards to make this card good. Now, when it does its thing and Lightning Bolt is Ancestral Recall, that's going to feel nuts. I cannot argue with that. But I put this one in the more category of Coma, where like this commander will dominate casual tables if it's not answered immediately. But for CDH, not what I'm looking for.
The ceiling's very high, but I think that there's just so much interaction that can happen that it's going to feel like a Bolas of Citadel, but worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree. Two.
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 Two. Two. And then our last card is Sprawling Crawler. This is 3 mana for a 3/2 artifact creature for Phyrexian Construct. At the beginning of your upkeep, each player draws a card. But whenever an opponent draws a card, that player loses a life. Is this trade-off worth it?
This is another Obnixilus card of the set.
This is the Obnixilus card of the set, yeah.
This one gives your opponents cards. I hate that.
It just gives them extra cards, but...
It does punish their draws.
It punishes their draws and gives you 2 Obnixilus triggers per player per turn cycle, though, just at different times. Because it gives you 1 Obnixilus trigger for each player at your upkeep as each of them lose 1 life.
That's just 1 Obnixilus trigger.
Yeah, because it's whenever 1 or more opponents. Yeah, you're right. So this is 4 Obnixilus triggers a turn. Because then 1 on your upkeep, and then every time that they draw a card, it's at least 4 Obnixilus triggers a turn.
Yeah, I don't love the giving cards, but every card that you give them, you get 1 too. So it's kind of like a better exchange.
Kind of keeps you on parity.
I think it'll probably end up playing out better than how it thinks in my head, if that makes sense. Because I don't like, I'm not playing any cards to get my opponent stuff, but
maybe it's
Wheel
bad.
Wheel Fortune's good.
Yeah, that's true. But like maybe it's bad because if something happens to your Obnixilus, then it's just strictly giving everyone else other cards.
The 1 damage I don't think is truly a big enough punishment. They're just going to draw until they don't want to anymore, and they then still have the cards, which is what they were looking for, and then they'll get rid of your thing and keep going.
Exactly, yeah. So I would say 2.5, because there is a deck I could conceivably see it in, yeah. But I'm not guaranteed to want to play it in Obnixilus.
2.4 for me. I'm feeling spiteful 2.5. At the end here.
Ooh, yeah. Man, what a dark turn that we took at the end of the podcast here. Cool.
so mysterious.
We just have a couple more minutes here, but we have been talking about some SpongeBob predictions.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about what we expect from the SpongeBob Secret Lair?
Dude, fuck if I know. I mean, having SpongeBob Secret Lair is kind of crazy.
This is the world we're in, right?
This is the world we're in.
Like, we're taking left turns all of a sudden end of the year here.
I do feel kind of like when they were talking about how... Remember when Walking Dead came out and they were talking about how universe adjacent stuff? To me, this is about as far as you can get. So was other stuff. So was like the Fortnite stuff was kind of as far as
that
you
was
get.
Also
there's
pretty,
an arcane signet that's a football. To me, that's also as far as you can get. So whatever. SpongeBob is funny. In my childhood, I think of very fondly of SpongeBob. So I'm hoping for Doodlebob. I really hope that had some sort of clone.
Phantasmal Image specifically would make a great Doodlebob. Because I think that it's all just going to be reskins of cards. I don't think we're going to get any mechanically unique SpongeBob stuff since it's just going to be a secret. Layer.
Are we basing that off of
a hunch
and just
what
a hunch.
I want
yeah it was really what we want
really what I want
they
yeah.
could do original cards they've done original cards with secret
they
layers
did, yeah they
just did the Marvel ones
and they did it for yeah I guess that's
they just
true.
Did that so they
Fuck,
could
yeah we're gonna get original
we're
cards.
Gonna get original
but the problem is I've been saying this to you in person a bunch if we're gonna get cartoons characters on original cards I want them to be able to like put the cartoon force into the game
yeah
so that, that way like you can like have the game be cartoonish and like SpongeBob would or Bugs Bunny static ability would just be you can create whatever rules would be beneficial to you in the game.
This is for power scaling reasons because Bugs Bunny is too powerful.
Bugs Bunny would be the most busted card in the universe if it was printed in the game.
But but Bugs Bunny also... I guess, yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's not going to be included. It's going to be character-centric
stuff. It's
going
to be character.
Right?
Like, something about, like, SpongeBob in his karate gear, and then he's going to be able to do a karate chop. Or it's going to be, like, he's flipping burgers, and he makes food tokens.
I want Remand, but it's, no, this is Patrick, and then they hang up the phone.
I put love it back that, in, yeah.
No, this is Patrick.
Honestly,
try again.
If it was all just, like, reskinned bits, I would be so happy. Like, if they found a way to make that, what's the Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy villain scene between him and Patrick where he's trying to give Patrick his wallet.
This is your wallet?
Yeah.
No, I've never seen it before.
Sounds right to me. Like, I feel like if we can get that onto a card, like
I would love that.
Like a reskin card that's called Sounds Right to Me, like that would be amazing.
What I really want, Krabby Patty food token. And that's, that would be insane if they don't do that. That's so low hanging fruit, but Krabby Patty food token would be incredible.
Is there a way we could turn Mr. Krabs into like Magus of the Greed and it's just greed on a creature?
They should print him as Dockside.
They should just, Dockside too is so funny. Yeah.
That would be really good.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's already been locked in for a year. That's why we're so pissed about this, man.
I know. I'm kind of hoping they don't just, like, take the obvious low-hanging fruit and go, oh, well, we could make the squirrel.
Sandy.
We can make Sandy Chatterfang. Like, I really hope they just don't do, like, lame crossovers like that.
They could do them all as, like, tokens. Like, Sandy could be a squirrel token. I don't know that there is a sponge token.
I don't think they'll do a token secret lair.
But they could do a, like, what if a Squidward was, like, one of the octopus tokens? Like, the 8/8s that Kiora makes?
That would Squidward be kind of funny. Making them into tokens, I think,
specifically making Squidward into not a magic card, but only a token, I feel like would lean into, like, the mediocrity of Squidward and his envy and stuff.
That other meme of, like, Patrick and SpongeBob running around outside all happy and Squidward's looking at them from inside his window. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They have some good opportunities here.
There's a lot that can go really right with it. I'm only trying to look at the positives.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about any of the other stuff that they talked about recently? Like every other set is going to be Universes Beyond.
Oh, we should. Yeah. Should we touch on that real quick?
That doesn't change much for us. I think it's cool. I don't know. I think I've gotten to the point now where I think it's cool. I don't know the Final Fantasy characters at all, but I also don't know
anything about the Magic the Gathering.
I don't
characters,
know anything
really.
About the magic sets. Yeah. When I met Oko, I had no idea who Oko is. So if I meet a Final Fantasy character, I'll have no idea who there is. But if it's a powerful card, that's great. So
that's the only thing I'm going to care about. Like, how do the mechanics work?
Yeah, it's no different. The difference is some people are way more excited than me about cards, but that's always been the case because Vorthos has always existed and they've always been excited for things that I don't know or give a shit about.
And
so,
the IPs that I am more Vorthos-y about, I will be even more excited about.
Oh,
in
my
the
God.
Same
Can
way
you imagine
that,
if
like,
they do Bleach? Like, that would be so sick.
Oh, my God, right? Like, all it's going to do is have my excitement for new standard sets either be the same or be, like, way skyrocketed beyond belief.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So it's really all positive in my book, but I understand where worry comes from some players,
right?
But
the worry,
the
like
future.
The worry is just like an acknowledged anxiety. Like, they could have always fucked up. They could have always
made
characters
fucked up.
They have always, like, they've done it before, they'll do it again. Like, I don't like cowboys. We went to a cowboy set, whatever. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, right? Like, but after 3 months, who gives a shit?
Right.
Yeah.
Going right to another set. Three months is generous too.
Also, if you're only a commander player, then
this changes
who
nothing.
Gives a shit
at
all.
It doesn't make a
you
difference.
You don't play the decks. Don't get the cards from the set to put in the decks if you're not happy about them, right? Yeah, you'll run into that player sometimes. Don't yuck on their yum. Maybe you do for 5 seconds, but still play against the deck because it's a mechanically unique thing that you are not going to see without these Universes Beyond stuff.
I'm overall excited, and it's an obvious move. I think if they want to get new players into Magic, their big thing is Universes Beyond, but the way that new players get into Magic is Standard. So to get Iron Man and then not be able to play Iron Man in Standard feels weird. I guess now a lot of new players are going straight to Commander, but I do think Standard should be a good road to help teach players the game, and being able to play your Universes Beyond cards in Standard just, I think, makes sense.
Now, also on a personal note, this is entirely personally how I feel about this. I much prefer top-down set design as opposed to bottom-up set design.
Top-down is flavor first?
That's when you have flavor first and you build cards based off of the flavor as opposed to bottom-up, which is building cards and then, like, building the world around the cards. Right. There's so much flavor that's out there that, like, I'd rather just be able to, like, kind of pick from those trees as opposed to, like, only be limited to Magic the Gathering. Which we're still going to get plenty of.
I agree. Yeah, it just is what Magic is. Magic has always been everything. It's Magic. It's not like it's not Wizards. It's, you know what I mean? It's not Dragons and Knights.
It's not like when they were going to do Arabian Nights with the purple background.
Magic is everything. That's what Magic to me is. It's everything. So including other IPs is just good fun.
It's only human natural.
Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Spengler, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky V, Insomnia, S.C. Phillips, Olden Groompy, Gecko21, Killabritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Goto9, Kwaje Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to support us, what is it? If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Huge shout out to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use our code playtowin5 and the affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
We got Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Bauer, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H., Mawcraft, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson. Sorry.
Start over.
You can tap it.
All right. You need a glass of water or something? What's going
on? Okay. Create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a nightmare in addition to its other types. Then exile all nightmare other tokens you control. Let me re...
What a train wreck this whole card's been.
Yeah.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.